This is the radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel, Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of Acts. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in the book of Acts, chapter 27, with today's study.
Four ways to miss God's will. Get impatient, take a vote, test the winds, and let your lust take over. In contrast, if you want to walk in the center of God's will, be patient and learn to wait. Rely on God's wisdom, even when it's unpopular with your friends. Base your decisions on conviction, not convenience, and walk in the Spirit. Rely on God to satisfy your needs. Well, notice verse 14. But not long after, a tempestuous headwind arose called a Euroclydon. And we get our word typhoon from the Greek word translated here tempestuous. A typhoon was stirred up in the sea. The sailors named these winds after the direction of their origin. Euroclydon means the northeasterner. A sudden storm arose, a typhoon. So when the ship was caught and could not head into the wind, we let her drive. Now Phoenix was 45 miles up the coast of Crete from Fairhavens. But suddenly the winds shift, and these soft southern winds turn into violent northeasterlies. Huge swells were suddenly slamming into the wooden hull of the boat. If they fought the storm, if they tried to hold their course, the boat would break apart under the stress. The sailors' only option was to sail with the wind, stop resisting, and just try to ride out the storm. Verse 16, and running under the shelter of an island called Clauda, we secured the skiff with difficulty. Up until this point, they had been dragging their lifeboat. Now all of a sudden, rather than lose the dinghy, they try to tie it to the main ship. And when they had taken it on board, they used cables to undergird the ship. As the waves were slapping against the side of the ship, they could hear the timbers start to creak and even crack. And so they strung ropes under the hull in hopes of stabilizing the frame and keeping the ship from breaking apart. They're taking desperate measures. This storm is severe. And then we're told, in fearing lest they should run aground on the Syrtis sands, they struck sail and so were driven. Finally, they just gave up. The more they fought the northeastern winds, the further south they were pushed. And the sailors feared. What Luke says here, he calls them the Syrtis sands. These were quicksands off the coast of North Africa. The area was nicknamed the ship's graveyard. And so to avoid the dangers, the seamen, they lowered their sails and they just drifted. This made them completely vulnerable. Verse 18. And because we were exceedingly tempest-tossed, the next day they lightened the ship. On the third day, we threw the ship's tackle overboard with our own hands. I mean, the more weight the ship carried, the more momentum in the wrong direction. And so they started ditching cargo to lighten the load. Now, when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest beat on us, all hope that we would be saved was finally given up. Now remember, this was before the day of electronic navigational devices. The ancient mariners, they plotted their course by looking at the stars. But it had been weeks since they'd even had a break in the clouds. There was no clue as to where they were or how far they drifted off course. These salty seamen, they were terrified. Their desperation now gives way to despair. The experts on board have given up. Everyone had given up, in fact, except Paul. Verse 21. But after long abstinence from food, you remember they were at sea 2 weeks. They thought the trip was going to take less than a day, so they weren't prepared. They didn't have the food they needed. Then Paul stood in the midst of them and said, "Men, you should have listened to me and not have sailed from Crete and incurred this disaster and loss." Now, how do you like this guy? He jumps up on deck and he says, "Hey, I told you so." They probably would have thrown him overboard if it was not for what he said next. "And now I urge you to take heart, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship." How do you know that, Paul? "For there stood by me this night an angel of God, to whom I belong and whom I serve." And I love that terminology. Notice, an angel of God, the God to whom I belong. Can you say that tonight? I hope you can. Hey, know to whom you belong, and it's less likely you'll become someone else's pawn. People won't push you around when you know to whom you belong. And the angel appeared to Paul saying, "Do not be afraid, Paul. You must be brought before Caesar, and indeed God has granted you all those who sail with you." Apparently, Paul had prayed. He had asked God to save the passengers and the crew. Then he concludes, "Therefore, take heart, men, for I believe God that it will be just as it was told me. However, we must run aground on a certain island." In a crisis, real leadership rises to the surface. Everyone had given up hope except Paul. Rather than give up, he steps up. He says, "Take heart, for I believe God." You know, it's easy to believe God in a nice setting like this tonight, in a home or in a sanctuary. It's easy to believe God there. But it's in the midst of the crisis. It's in the midst of the storm, when your boat's about to break apart, when you haven't seen the sky for days, then can you say, "For I believe God." Can you take heart even in the midst of the storm? Do you believe God's promise even in the midst of the storm? Verse 27, "Now when the 14th night had come, as we were driven up and down in the Adriatic Sea." You know, today the Adriatic technically is between Italy and Eastern Europe, but in Paul's day, it referred to the whole eastern half of the Mediterranean. They'd spent 14 days. And about midnight, the sailors sensed that they were drawing near some land. It could be that they heard the breakers now slapping on the rocks, slapping on the shoreline, so they realized they were coming close to land. And they took soundings and found it to be 20 fathoms. When they had gone a little further, they took soundings again and found it to be 15 fathoms. The Greek word here translated soundings means to heave the lead. That's what the word literally means, to heave the lead. They were dropping these lead anchors and they were timing them to see how long it took to hit the bottom. They could tell that the water was getting shallower. A fathom is about 6 feet, so their first measurement was 120 feet. Their second measurement was 90 feet. Obviously, they're getting closer to the shore, and they're getting there quickly. Verse 29, "Then fearing lest we should run aground on the rocks, they dropped 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come." Remember, it's still dark. Hey, this is terrifying. It's pitch black. No one can see. They know they're getting close to shore. I mean, it's like driving with no headlights. You know you're going to crash, but you just don't know when. And so they drop off 4 anchors off the stern of the ship and they pray for sunrise. Verse 30. "And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship, when they had let down the skiff," remember that skiff that they had tied onto the back of the ship? They were going to let it down under pretense of putting out anchors from the prow. Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, "Unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved." Note, you had to stay put to be saved. Jump ship in an attempt to save yourself and you drown. And it's just like our salvation. We have to remain in Christ to be saved. Salvation is in Christ. We have to stay put. We have to abide in the vine. We have to continue in our faith. Jump ship, fail to abide, launch out on your own, and you'll drown. Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the skiff and let it fall off. And as day was about to dawn, Paul implored them all to take food, saying, "Today is the 14th day. You have waited and continued without food and eaten nothing. Therefore, I urge you to take nourishment, for this is for your survival, since not a hair will fall from your head of any of you." Now, the crew members, they were about to burn some calories. You ever been out in some rough water? It can be taxing. They have received the Lord's promise. Now they need to eat some protein. And so Paul encourages them to take food. "And when he had said these things, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And when he had broken it, he began to eat. And then they were all encouraged and also took food for themselves." And notice by now, the crew has a new captain. Notice this. Prisoner Paul has now become Captain Paul. He's the one giving the orders. And in all, we were 276 persons on the ship, quite a crew. So when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and threw out the wheat into the sea. I mean, they knew they were in for a rough landing, so they throw over their cargo. And when it was day, they did not recognize the land, but they observed a bay with a beach onto which they planned to run the ship if possible. The plan was to just pick up a head of steam and just aim for the beach and try to just run the ship right up onto the beach. That's not what happened. And they let go the anchors and left them in the sea. They started to make their mad dash, meanwhile losing the rudder ropes, and they hoisted the mainsail to the wind and made for the shore. But striking a place where the two seas met, in other words, they hit a sandbar. They ran the ship aground. They got stuck on the sandbar. And the prow stuck fast and remained immovable, but the stern was being broken up by the violence of the waves. The front of the ship stuck into the sandbar. It left the rear of the ship exposed, and so the waves just beat against the stern, and the ship started disintegrating from the back to the front. This was a tough voyage. By now, the wooden ship is barely intact, and so once it gets stuck, the waves begin to disassemble what's left. Verse 42. And the soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners, lest any of them should swim away and escape. And why would they do that? Well, according to Roman law, if a prisoner escaped, the soldier assigned to guard him had to finish his sentence. And so these soldiers planned to just go ahead and kill off the prisoners in order to save their own skin. But the centurion, you remember the head honcho, Julius, wanting to save Paul, he kept them from their purpose and commanded that those who could swim should jump overboard first and get to land, and the rest, some on boards and some on parts of the ship. And so it was that they all escaped safely to land. And so just as God had promised, all who stayed with the ship made it safely. Now, isn't it ironic? The ship's boards and timbers acted as life rafts to get the crew to shore. And this is why it is always crucial to stay with the ship. Stay on board. If they had jumped ship, if they had given up, they would have drowned in the surf. It was because they stayed in the ship that these boards and timbers turned into life rafts, and that's what saved them. And the same is true in our relationship with God. Don't give up on God. Don't bail on His will. Don't jump ship. Stay exactly where God has called you, in that marriage, on that job, in that neighborhood, on that team. Stay exactly where God has called you, even if it's a turbulent situation, even if the relationship seems to be breaking apart, even if your life feels like it's falling apart. Remain where you've been called, for it's the lessons you learn there. It's even the pain that you endure there that becomes the very thing that saves you later in your life from future obstacles. Stay with the boat, and God will supply you what you need to be successful in the future. Chapter 28. Now, when they had escaped, they then found out that the island was called Malta. The island of Malta is about 58 miles south of Sicily. And recall the original destination for this ship was the Cretan port of Phoenix, which was 45 miles west of Fair Havens. This trip should have taken less than a day, 45 miles. Instead, they were at sea for 2 weeks, and they traveled 645 miles. Talk about a detour. They turned a 45-mile trip into a 645-mile trip. And this is what happens when you follow the wrong voices. Satan's plan for our lives starts out as a shortcut. That's how he presents it. That's how he paints it. But in the end, man, it's a long, hard, costly voyage. I heard a story of a professional race car driver. He was hired to drive a 15-block section of Colorado Springs, Colorado. The driver was extremely careful. He observed all of the speed, all of the traffic laws, and his time over the distance was 9 minutes, 35.1 seconds. Well, after he was finished, he was allowed to drive the same 15-block course as fast and as reckless as possible. With police permission, he drove at illegal speeds. He was guilty of 52 traffic violations. He could do it. He was a professional race car driver. And yet here was the surprising results. 52 violations, as fast as he wanted to go, he was only able to shave 3.9 seconds off his time. That's right. You see, we assume that the laws are in place to slow us down. In reality, we lose very little time doing the right thing. Very little time. Even the little bit of time that you do lose is worth it when you consider the safety and protection that comes with obedience. You know, if you think God's rules are getting in your way, cramping your style, slowing you down, you've been deceived. In the long run, God's way proves to be much easier, not harder. God's way makes life easier, not harder. If you don't believe me, just ask the crew members on Paul's ship. And the natives there on Malta, they showed us unusual kindness, for they kindled a fire and made us all welcome because of the rain that was falling and because of the cold. Now, in mid-October, nighttime temperatures on Malta are in the low 50s. That's not including the rain that was falling. That's not including the breeze that usually blows in off the ocean. It was probably chilly that night. And it was a great welcome for the locals to go out and to create this big bonfire for the water-soaked survivors. But notice here, who's gathering the firewood? Verse 3. But when Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks, notice this, the Apostle Paul. This is the man who authored 14 of the 27 New Testament books, but he's not above collecting sticks. He was a servant first, apostle second. Paul is gathering, he's serving, he's collecting a bundle of sticks for the fire. And when he laid them on the fire, a viper came out because of the heat and boom, fastened onto his hand. When a poisonous viper hibernates, the snake stiffens up. And so Paul picked it up inadvertently with a pile of sticks. But when the snake got near the fire, he woke up. And when you wake up from hibernation, you're hungry. And so he took a bite out of Paul's hand. The venom was deadly. Thus the locals expected Paul to kill over immediately. But we're told in verse 4, so when the natives saw the creature hanging from his hand, they said to one another, no doubt this man is a murderer, whom though he has escaped the sea, yet justice does not allow him to live. You know, the Maltese, they worshipped a goddess named Justice. And so here they assume that she's finally caught up to Paul, that she's rewarding him of the fate that he deserved. He escaped the sea, but now he's being punished by the snake. But Paul shook off the creature into the fire, and he suffered no harm. I love what Paul does with the snake. He just shakes it off. That's what he does. He just shakes it off. Of course, he could have rushed to the doctor, or someone could have applied a tourniquet. At least Julius could have pulled out his knife, cut across the bite marks, and sucked out the venom. I mean, that's what John Wayne always did. But no, Paul just shakes off the snake in the fire and just carries on. In other words, rather than focus on the wound, rather than nurse his hurts, he just shakes it off and carries on. And this is a huge lesson for any of us who pick up sticks and who serve the Lord and who gather firewood to put on the fire that warms God's people. Any of us who serve the Lord, this is a lesson for us tonight. You're being a servant. You're giving to others in practical ways when all of a sudden, out of nowhere, the old serpent Satan slithers along and seeks his poisonous fangs into your arm, it happens to everyone who serves the Lord. You get bit at times. You're trying to do good, and it comes back to bite you. And understand why Satan does this. He's trying to discourage your service to others. He wants you to focus on yourself, on your hurts, on your wounds. And so he tries to distract you. This is why the best way to handle a hurt or an attack or gossip about you, or if other people come at you and try to take a bite out of you, the best way to handle it is just shake it off. Just shake it off and keep on serving the Lord. That's how you handle it. If you take time off to nurse it or to fixate on it, you play right into Satan's hands. Just shake it off and keep serving the Lord. God protected Paul, and God will protect you. The bite won't be as bad as you think. God will neutralize the poison if you refuse to pamper the pain. Just keep on serving Him. I can't tell you how many times when somebody's tried to take a bite out of me, "Pastor Sandy, did you hear what they're saying about you?" You can't focus on it. You can't get fixated on it. You got to know God's going to take care of it. Just shake it off and just keep on doing what God's called you to do. And God will heal you, and He'll deal with that situation. However, they were expecting that he would swell up or suddenly fall down dead. But after they had looked for a while, a long time, and saw no harm come to him, they changed their minds and said that he was a god. Now here's a legitimate fulfillment of Mark chapter 16, verses 17 and 18. You've probably read these words and wondered, what in the world is this talking about? Here's what Jesus predicted. "These signs will follow those who believe. In my name, they will cast out demons. They will speak with new tongues. They will take up serpents. And if they drink anything deadly, it will by no means hurt them." But notice that line. "They will take up serpents and it will by no means hurt them." Now we've all heard about the snake handlers in Appalachia. You know, they literally pick up poison snakes and dance around to test the veracity of this verse. Hey, but rather than test God's faithfulness or their own faith, what they're really doing is testing God's patience, if you ask me. Such acts are not acts of faith. They're really presumption, if not foolishness. I don't believe God ever intended for believers to go out looking for cottonmouths and copperheads. Here's what he knew. God knew that the church would march out into the remotest parts of the world, that missionaries would go into jungles, to islands like Malta. Snakes and other dangers would be lurking. And here God promises supernatural protection to His witnesses, to those that go out in His name to share the gospel in remote places. David Brainerd was a missionary to the Delaware Indians years and years ago. The Indians made contact with Brainerd long before he made contact with them. In fact, one day, as the story goes, a group of warriors slipped up quietly to his tent. They were armed with knives and tomahawks. Their aim was to kill the white man, the stranger. But when they peered into his tent, they were stunned by what they saw. Brainerd was on his knees in prayer, and just behind him was a poisonous rattlesnake coiled and ready to strike. The missionary, oblivious to the snake, continued to pray, while suddenly the snake lowered its head and slithered away. And the Indians were so amazed that they forgot their intention to murder him, and they went back to the camp with news of what they'd seen. When Brainerd finally approached the Indians, he was amazed at how well he was received. He thought they might kill him.
Being on the go is something we're all accustomed to in this culture. The hustle and bustle of life seems to make the days just fly by. For most of us, our smartphones are sort of an extension of our bodies, constantly ringing and dinging, telling us where to be and what the next appointment is. The technology that we enjoy in this day and age is amazing. And while there's certainly no end to the bad things we can find online and through our smartphones, There's also some great kingdom-minded options. We'd like to invite you to download the Sandy Adams mobile app. Our mobile app is available for iPhone, Android, and Windows smartphones. Or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the link from the main menu. When you download the app, you'll be able to listen to the most recent messages taught by Pastor Sandy, browse the series archive, and search the archive alphabetically. Finally, when you download the mobile app, you'll also have the opportunity to join us live for our Sunday morning worship service right from your smartphone. Again, to download the Sandy Adams mobile app, simply enter Sandy Adams in the search options of your smartphone's app store, or log on to sandyadams.org and simply click on the mobile app option right on the homepage. And please join us again as Pastor Sandy continues teaching through the Bible right here on Sandy Adams Radio.